Zeus belted Typhon at a distance with thunderbolts, and at close quarters struck him down with an adamantine sickle, and as he fled pursued him closely as far as Mount Cassius, which overhangs Syria. There, seeing the monster sore wounded, he grappled with him. But Typhon twined about him and gripped him in his coils. Having recovered his strength, as Zeus suddenly from heaven riding in a chariot of winged horses, pelted Typhon with thunderbolts. So being again pursued he, Typhon, came to Thrace, and in fighting at Mount Hemus he heaved whole mountains, a stream of blood gushed out on the mountain, and they say that from that circumstance the mountain was called Hemus, bloody. And when he started to flee through the Sicilian Sea, Zeus cast Mount Etna in Sicily upon him. That is a huge mountain, from which down to this day they say that blasts of fire issue from the thunderbolts that were thrown. The struggle left deep marks on the entire ancient world. Some districts were especially associated with the events of this cosmic fight. The Egyptian shore of the Red Sea was called Typhonia. Strabo narrates also that the Arami, Aramaeans or Syrians, were terrified witnesses of the battle of Zeus with Typhon. And Typhon, who, they add, was a dragon, when struck by the bolts of lightning, fled in search of a descent underground, and not only did he cut furrows into the earth and form the beds of the rivers, but descending underground, he made fountains break forth. Similar descriptions come from various places of the ancient world, in which the nations relate the experience of their ancestors who witnessed the great catastrophe of the middle of the second millennium. At that time the Israelites had not yet arrived at a clear monotheistic concept and, like other peoples, they saw in the great struggle a conflict between good and evil. The author of the Book of Exodus, suppressing this conception of the ancient Israelites, presented the portent of fire and smoke moving in a column as an angel or messenger of the Lord. However, many passages in other books of the scriptures preserved the picture as it impressed itself upon eyewitnesses. Ra'ab is the Hebrew name for the contester with the Most High. O Lord God of hosts, who is a strong Lord like unto thee? Thou hast broken Ra'ab in pieces. The heavens are thine, the earth also is thine, as for the world and the fullness thereof, thou hast founded them. The north and the south thou hast created them. Deutero-Isaiah prayed. Awake, awake, put on strength, O arm of the Lord. Awake as in the ancient days, in the generations of old. Art thou not it that hath cut Ra'ab, and wounded the dragon? Art thou not it which hath dried the sea, the waters of the great deep, that hath made the depths of the sea a way for the ransom to pass over? From these passages it is clear that the battle of the Lord with Ra'ab was not a primeval battle before creation, as some scholars think. Isaiah prophesied for the future, in that day the Lord with his sore and great and strong sword shall punish Leviathan the piercing serpent, even Leviathan that crooked serpent, and he shall slay the dragon that is in the sea. The crooked serpent is shown in many ancient pictures. Bound Israelites saw the upheaval of nature, darkness, hurricane, mountains of water, fire and smoke, recorded in the Greek legend as the circumstances in which the battle of Zeus with the dragon Typhon was fought. In the same pit of the sea lie the Pharaoh and his hosts. Up to now I have identified Ra'ab Typhon as a comet. But if Typhon lies on the bottom of the sea, is he not the Pharaoh? This would mean that in the legend of Typhon two elements were welded together, the Pharaoh, who perished in the catastrophe, and the outrageous rebel against Zeus, the Lord of the Sky. In Pliny's Natural History, the 91st section of the second book reads, a terrible comet was seen by the people of Ethiopia and Egypt, to which Typhon, the king of that period, gave his name. It had a fiery appearance and was twisted like a coil, and it was very grim to behold. It was not really a star so much as what might be called a ball of fire. The visit of a disastrous comet, so many times referred to in this book, is told in plain words, not in disguise. However, I must find support for my assumption that the comet of the days of King Typhon was the comet of the days of the Exodus. I investigated the writings of the old chronographers, and in Comptographia of Hevelius, 1688, I found references to the works of Galvisius, Helvicus, Herlesius, and Rockenbach, all of whom used manuscripts for the most part and not printed sources, as they lived only a little over one century after the invention of movable characters and the printing press. Hevelius wrote, in Latin, in the year of the world 2453, 1495 BC, according to certain authorities, a comet was seen in Syria. In Ages in Chaos, evidence will be presented to identify the pharaoh of the Exodus as Tautom, the last king of the Middle Kingdom. He is Tautomus, of Manetho, in whose days a blast of God's displeasure fell upon Egypt and terminated the period at present known as the Middle Kingdom. The name of his queen is given in the nose of El Arishastefnut. Ra'ab is a name met among the Egyptian kings of that period, China to India, to Persia, to Assyria, to Egypt, to Mexico. With the rise of the monotheistic concept, the Israelites regarded this crooked serpent, the contester with the Most High, as the Lord's own creation. He stretcheth out the north over the empty place, and hangeth the earth upon nothing. The pillars of heaven tremble. He divideth the sea with his power. His hand hath formed the crooked serpent. The psalmist also says, God is my king of old. Thou didst divide the sea by thy strength. Thou breakest the heads of Leviathan in pieces. Thou didst cleave the fountain and the flood, thou dredst up mighty rivers. The sea was cleft, the earth was cut with furrows, great rivers disappeared, others appeared. The earth rumbled for many years, and the peoples thought that the fiery dragon that had been struck down had descended underground and was groaning there. The comet of Typhon. Of all the mysterious phenomena which accompanied the Exodus, this mysterious pillar seems the first to demand explanation. W. Fithian Adams. The Call of Israel, one of the places of the heavenly combat between elementary forces of nature, as narrated by Apollodorus and Strabo, was on the way from Egypt to Syria. According to Herodotus, the final act of the fight between Zeus and Typhon took place at Lake Spon on the coastal route from Egypt to Palestine. On the way from Egypt to Palestine, the Israelites, after a night of terror and strong east wind, witnessed the upheaval of the day of the passage. These parallel circumstances lead to a conclusion that will sound somewhat strange. Typhon, Typhius, lies on the bottom of the sea. The Exodus of the Israelites is placed by Galvisius in the year of the world 2453, or 1495 BC. I was fortunate enough to locate one copy of Rockenbach's De Comitis Tractatus Novus Methodicus in the United States. This book was published in Wittenberg in 1602. Its author was professor of Greek, mathematics, and law, and dean of philosophy at Frankfurt. He wrote his book using old sources which he did not name, ex probatissimis ir antiquissimis veterum scriptoribus, from the most trustworthy and the most ancient of the early writers. As a result of his diligent gathering of ancient material, he made the following entry, in the year of the world 2453, as many trustworthy authors, on the basis of many conjectures, have determined. A comet appeared which Pliny also mentioned in his second book. It was fiery, of irregular circular form, with a rapt head, it was in the shape of a globe and was of terrible aspect. It is said that King Typhon ruled at that time in Egypt. Certain authorities assert that the comet was seen in Syria, Babylonia, India, in the sign of Capricorn, in the form of a disc, at the time when the children of Israel advanced from Egypt toward the Promised Land, led on their way by the pillar of cloud during the day and by the pillar of fire at night. Rockenbach did not draw any conclusion on the relation of the comet of the days of Exodus to the natural phenomena of that time. His intent was only to fix the date of the comet of Typhon. Heffer Eschen, and Junctinus, in addition to Pliny, mentioned the Typhon comet. It is depicted as an immense globe, globus immodicus, of fire, also as a sickle, which is a description of a globe illuminated by the sun, and close enough to be observed thus. Its movement was slow, its path was close to the sun. Its color was bloody, it was not of fiery, but of bloody redness. It caused destruction in rising and setting. Servius writes that this comet caused many plagues, evils, and hunger. to discover what were the manuscript sources of Abraham Rockenbach that led him to the same conclusion at which we have arrived, namely, that the Typhon comet appeared in the time of the Exodus, is a task not yet accomplished. Servius says that more information about the calamities caused by this comet is to be found in the writings of the Roman astrologer Campestre and in the works of the Egyptian astrologer Pitocyrus. It is possible that copies of works of some authors containing citations from the writings of these ancient astrologers, preserved in the libraries of Europe, were Rockenbach's manuscript sources. Campestre, as quoted by Lydus, was certain that should the comet Typhon again meet the Earth, a four-day encounter would suffice to destroy the world. 11. This implies also that the first encounter with the comet Typhon brought the Earth to the brink of destruction. But even without this somber prognostication of Campestre, we have a very imposing and quite inexhaustible array of references to Typhon and its destructive action against the world. Almost every Greek author referred to it. The real nature of Typhon being that of a comet, as explained by Pliny and others, all references to the disasters caused by Typhon must be understood as descriptions of natural catastrophes in which the Earth and the comet were involved. As is known, Pallas of the Greeks was another name for Typhon, also Seth of the Egyptians was an equivalent of Typhon. 12. Thus the number of references to the comet Typhon can be enlarged by references to Pallas and Seth. It was not only Abraham Rockenbach who synchronized the appearance of the comet Typhon with the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt. Looking for authors who might have done likewise, I found that Samuel Bochart, a scholarly writer of the 17th century, in his book Hierozoikon, has a passage in which he maintains that the plagues of the days of the Exodus resemble the calamities that Typhon brought in his train, and that therefore the flight of Typhon is the Exodus of Moses from Egypt. In this he actually follows the passage transmitted by Plutarch. But since Typhon, according to Pliny and others, was a comet, Samuel Bochart was close to the conclusions at which we arrive, traveling along another route. The spark. A phenomenon of great significance took place. The head of the comet did not crash into the Earth, but exchanged major electrical discharges with it. A tremendous spark sprang forth at the moment of the nearest approach of the comet, when the waters were heaped at their highest above the surface of the Earth and before they fell down, followed by a rain of debris torn from the very body and tail of the comet. And the angel of God, which went before the camp of Israel, the Egyptians regularly call Typhon, saith, it means overmastering and overpowering, and went behind them, and the pillar of the cloud went from before their face, and stood behind them, and it was a cloud and darkness, but it gave light by night. An exceedingly strong wind and lightnings rent the cloud. In the morning the waters rose as a wall and moved away. And the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea upon the dry ground, and the waters were a wall unto them on their right hand, and on their left, and the Egyptians pursued. And it came to pass, that in the morning watch the Lord looked unto the host of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and of the cloud, and troubled the host of the Egyptians, and took off their chariot wheels. And the waters returned, and covered the chariots, and the horsemen, and all the host of Pharaoh that came into the sea after them, there remained not so much as one of them. The immense tides were caused by the presence of a celestial body close by. They fell when a discharge occurred between the earth and the other body. Artaphernes, the author of the no longer extant Dite Judaeis, apparently knew that the words, "The Lord looked unto the host of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and of the cloud," refer to a great lightning. Eusebius quotes Artaphernes, "But when the Egyptians were pursuing them, a fire, it is said, shone out upon them from the front, and the sea overflowed the path again, and the Egyptians were all destroyed by the fire and the flood." The great discharges of interplanetary force are commemorated in the traditions, legends, and mythology of all the peoples of the world. The god Zeus of the Greeks, Odin of the Icelanders, Ukko of the Finns, Perun of the Russian pagans, Votan, Woden, of the Germans, Mazda of the Persians, Marduk of the Babylonians, Shiva of the Hindus, is pictured with lightning in his hand and described as the god who threw his thunderbolt at the world overwhelmed with water and fire. Carried similarly, many psalms of the scriptures commemorate the great discharges. Then the earth shook and trembled, the foundations also of the hills moved and were shaken. He bowed the heavens also, and came down. He did fly upon the wings of the wind. At the brightness that was before him his thick clouds passed, hailstones and coals of fire. The Lord also thundered in the heavens, and the highest gave his voice, hailstones and coals of fire. And he shot out lightnings. Then the channels of waters were seen, and the foundations of the world were discovered. The voice of the Lord is powerful. The voice of the Lord breaketh the cedars. The voice of the Lord divideth the flames of fire. The voice of the Lord shaketh the wilderness. The Lord shaketh the wilderness of Kadesh. For the kingdoms were moved. He uttered his voice, the earth melted. The waters saw thee. They were afraid. The depths also were troubled. The skies sent out a sound. Thine arrows also went abroad. The voice of thy thunder was in the heaven. The lightnings lightened the universe. The earth trembled and shook. Clouds and darkness are round about him. A fire goeth before him and burneth up his enemies round about. His lightnings enlightened the world. The earth saw and trembled. Carrot, nothing is easier than to add to the number of such quotations from other parts of the scriptures, Job, the Song of Deborah, the prophets. With the fall of the double well of water, the Egyptian host was swept away. The force of the impact threw the Pharaoh's army into the air. Come and see the works of God. He is terrible in his doing toward the children of men. He turned the sea into dry land. They went through the flood on foot. Thou hast caused men to ride over our heads. We went through fire and through water. This tossing of the Egyptian host into the air by an avalanche of water is referred to also in the Egyptian source I quoted before. On the shrine found in El Arish, the story is told of a hurricane and of a prolonged darkness when nobody could leave the palace, and of the pursuit by the Pharaoh Teuitom of the fleeing slaves whom he followed to Pikeroti, which is the biblical Pi Hakeroth. His majesty leapt into the place of the whirlpool. Then it is said that he was lifted by a great force. Although the larger part of the Israelite fugitives were already out of the reach of the falling tidal waves, a great number of them perished in this disaster, as in the previous ones of fire and hurricane of cinders. That Israelites perished at the Sea of Passage is implied in Psalm 68, where mention is made of my people that remained in the depths of the sea. These tidal waves also overwhelmed entire tribes who inhabited Tehama, the thousand-mile-long coastal region of the Red Sea. God sent against the Ahamites swift clouds, ants, and other signs of his rage, and many of them perished. In the land of Yahana, an impetuous torrent carried off all of them in a night. The scene of this catastrophe is known by the name of Idam, Fury. The author of this passage, Masudi, an Arab author of the 10th century, quotes an earlier author, Omeyyah, son of Abu Sult, in days of yore the Ahamites settled in Tehama, and a violent flood carried all of them away. Likewise the tradition related in Kait Abulahaniu is familiar with the plague of insects, ants of the smallest variety, that forced the tribe to migrate from Hejaz to their native land, where they were destroyed by Tufan, a deluge. In my reconstruction of ancient history, I endeavor to establish the synchronism of these events and the Exodus. The collapsed sky. The rain of meteorites and fire from the sky, the clouds of dust of exogenous origin that drifted low, and the displacement of the world quarters created the impression that the sky had collapsed. The ancient peoples of Mexico referred to a world age that came to its end when the sky collapsed and darkness enshrouded the world. Strabo relates, in the name of Ptolemaeus, the son of Lugus, a general of Alexander and founder of the Egyptian dynasty called by his name, that the Celti who lived on the shores of the Adriatic were asked by Alexander what it was they most feared, to which they replied that they feared no one, but only that the sky might collapse. The Chinese refer to the collapse of the sky which took place when the mountains fell. 3. Because mountains fell or were leveled at the same time when the sky was displaced, ancient peoples, not only the Chinese, thought that mountains support the sky. The earth trembled, and the heavens dropped. The mountains melted, says the Song of Deborah. 4. The earth shook, the heavens also dropped at the presence of God, even Sinai itself was moved, says the psalmist. The tribes of Samoa in their legends refer to a catastrophe when in days of old the heavens fell down. The heavens or the clouds were so low that the people could not stand erect without touching them. The Finns tell in their Kalevala that the support of the sky gave way and then a spark of fire kindled a new sun and a new moon. 7. The Lapps make offerings accompanied by the prayer that the sky should not lose its support and fall down. The Eskimos of Greenland are afraid that the support of the sky may fail and the sky fall down and kill all human beings. A darkening of the sun and the moon will precede such a catastrophe. The primitives of Africa, in eastern as well as western provinces of the continent, tell about the collapse of the sky in the past. The Avanero tribesmen say that many years ago the grates of the sky, Eru, let the sky fall on the earth. Almost all the people were killed, only a few remained alive. The tribes of Kanga and Lunga also have a tradition of the collapse of the sky which annihilated the human race. The Wanioro in Anuro likewise relate that the sky fell on the earth and killed everybody. The god Kagra threw the firmament upon the earth to destroy mankind. The tradition of the Kashinor, the aborigines of western Brazil, is narrated as follows. The lightnings flashed and the thunders roared terribly and all were afraid. Then the heaven burst and the fragments fell down and killed everything and everybody. Heaven and earth changed places. Nothing that had life was left upon the earth. In this tradition are included the same elements, the lightnings and thunderings, the bursting of heaven, the fall of meteorites. About the change of places between heaven and earth there is more to say, and I shall not postpone the subject for long. Chapter 4, Boiling Earth and Sea. Two celestial bodies were driven near to each other. The interior of the terrestrial globe pushed towards the exterior, the earth, disturbed in its rotation, developed heat. The land surface became hot. Various sources of many peoples describe the melting of the earth's surface and the boiling of the sea. The earth burst and lava flowed. The Mexican sacred book, Popol Vuh. The manuscript Caxical. The manuscript Trueno all record how the mountains in every part of the Western Hemisphere simultaneously gushed lava. The volcanoes that opened along the entire chain of the Cordilleras and in other mountain ranges and on flatland vomited fire, vapor, and torrents of lava. These and other Mexican sources relate how, at the closing hours of the age that was brought to an end by the rain of fire, mountains swelled under the pressure of molten masses and new ridges rose. New volcanoes sprang out of the earth, and streams of lava flowed out of the cleft earth. Events underlying Greek and Mexican traditions are narrated in the scriptures. The mountains shake with the swelling. The earth melted. Clouds and darkness. Fire, the earth saw and trembled. The hills melted like wax. He looketh on the earth, and it trembleth. He toucheth the hills, and they smoke. The earth trembled, the mountains melted. Even that Sinai he rebuketh the sea, and maketh it dry, and dreeth up all the rivers. The mountains quake at him, and the hills melt, and the earth is burned. Yea, the world, and all that dwell therein. The rivers steamed, and even the bottom of the sea boiled here and there. The sea boiled, all the shores of the ocean boiled, all the middle of it boiled, says the Zenda Vista. The star Tistria made the sea boil. The traditions of the Indians retain the memory of this boiling of the water in river and sea. The tribes of British Columbia tell, great clouds appeared. Such a great heat came, that finally the water boiled. People jumped into the streams and lakes to cool themselves, and died. On the North Pacific coast of America the tribes insist that the ocean boiled. It grew very hot. Many animals jumped into the water to save themselves. But the water began to boil. The Indians of the Southern Ute tribe in Colorado record in their legends that the rivers boiled. Jewish tradition, as preserved in the rabbinical sources, declares that the mire at the bottom of the Sea of Passage was heated. The Lord fought against the Egyptians with the pillar of cloud and fire. The mire was heated to the boiling point by the pillar of fire. The rabbinical sources say also that the pillar of fire and of smoke leveled mountains. Hesiod in his Theogony, relating the upheaval caused by a celestial collision, says, the huge earth groaned. A great part of the huge earth was scorched by the terrible vapor and melted as tin melts when heated by man's art, or as iron, which is hardest of all things, is softened by glowing fire and mountain glens. According to the traditions of the New World, the profile of the land changed in a catastrophe. New valleys were formed, mountain ridges were torn apart, new gulfs were cut out, ancient heights were overturned and new ones sprang up. The few survivors of the ruined world were enveloped in darkness, the sun in some way did not exist, and in intervals in the light of blazing fires they saw the silhouettes of new mountains. The Mayan sacred book Popolva says that the god rolled mountains and removed mountains, and great and small mountains moved and shaked. Mountains swelled with lava. Conairea Viracocha, the god of the Incas, raised mountains from the flat land and flattened other mountains. Greater than in similarly, when Israel went out of Egypt. The sea saw and fled. The mountains skipped like rams, and the little hills like lambs. Tremble, thou earth, at the presence of the Lord, which removeth the mountains, which overturneth them in his anger, which shaketh the earth out of her place, which commandeth the sun and it riseth not, which alone spreadeth out the heavens, and treadeth upon the waves of the sea. Mount Sinai. Along the eastern shore of the Red Sea there stretches a mountain now crested with a number of volcanic craters, at present extinguished. Some, however, were active not many centuries ago. One of these volcanoes is usually described as the Mount of the Lawgiving. In the 70s of the last century, a scholar, Charles Bick, suggested that Mount Sinai was a volcano in the Arabian desert. 1. The Book of Deuteronomy, 4:11, says the mountain burned with fire unto the midst of heaven, with darkness, clouds, and thick darkness. Bick's idea was rejected by his contemporaries and ultimately by himself. Modern scholars, however, agree with his original theory, and for this reason they look for the Mount of the Lawgiving among the volcanoes of Mount Sur and not on the traditional Sinai Peninsula where there are no volcanoes. Thus the claims of the rival peaks of the Sinai Peninsula for the honor of being the Mount of the Lawgiving. 3. Are silenced by new contestants. It is true that it is stated the mountains melted. Even the Sinai. But this melting of summits does not necessarily mean an opening up of craters. Rocks turned into a flowing mass. The plateau of the Sinai Peninsula is covered with formations of basalt lava. 5. Wide stretches of the Arabian desert also glisten with lava. 6. Lava formations, interspersed with extinguished volcanoes, stretch from the vicinity of Palmyra southward into Arabia as far as Mecca. Only a few thousand years ago the deserts glowed with the beacons of many volcanoes, mountains melted, and lava flowed over the ground from numerous shores. The celestial body that the great architect of nature sent close to the earth, made contact with it in electrical discharges, retreated, and approached again. If we are to believe the scriptural data, there elapsed 7 weeks, or by another computation, about 2 months from the day of the Exodus to the day of the revelation at Mount Sinai. There were thunders and lightnings, and a thick cloud upon the mount, and the voice of the trumpet exceeding loud, so that all the people that was in the camp trembled. And Mount Sinai was altogether on a smoke. And the smoke thereof ascended as the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mount quaked greatly. And when the voice of the trumpet sounded long, and waxed louder and louder, Moses spake, and God answered him by a voice. The Talmud and Midrashim describe the mountain of the Lawgiving as quaking so greatly that it appeared as if it were lifted up and shaken above the heads of the people, and the people felt as if they were no longer standing securely on the ground, but were held up by some invisible force. 10. The presence of a heavenly body overhead caused this phenomenon and this feeling. Then the earth shook and trembled. The foundations also of the hills moved and were shaken, because he was wroth. He bowed the heavens also, and came down, and darkness was under his feet. At the brightness that was before him his thick clouds passed, hailstones and coals of fire. The Lord also thundered in the heavens. Hailstones and coals of fire. He shot out lightnings. Then the channels of waters were seen, and the foundations of the world were discovered. Earth and heaven participated in the cosmic convulsion. In the fourth book of Ezra the occurrences witnessed at Mount Sinai are described in these words, Thou didst bow down the heavens, didst make the earth quake, and convulse the world. Thou didst cause the deeps to tremble and didst alarm the spheres. The approach of a star toward the earth in the days of the revelation at Sinai is implied by the text of the tractate Shabbat, although the ancestors of the later proselytes were not present at the mountain of the law-giving. Their star was there close by.